more. It's the heart of the Osborn that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find the book you love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. Titles old and new, you'll find them all. With action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The Comic Book Store, the Comic Book Store. 'Cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the Osborn that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
All right, welcome back to Source Material Live. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And this week is Tom and Jerry week. But Tom and Jerry don't have a modern lefty DC Hanna-Barbera modern update that we can dig into and tear apart. But they do have one called Rough and Ready, the Rough and Ready Show. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And it's funny because the Rough and Ready Show actually came from the same animator group that did Tom and Jerry. There's your link.
Hey.
As a matter of fact, the Rough and Ready Show came after Tom and Jerry once they were done doing that. That voice you hear waiting in the wings for me to introduce him is the one and only Chris Sheehan. How do you do, sir?
I'm a little more bored than I was the last time we talked.
Yeah, I get that. you mean a week ago? 2 weeks ago? Whenever it was?
Oh, all those weeks ago. All those weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. That other thing you're talking about hasn't happened yet.
Oh, God, yeah. We are not being linear, which that might be a link to this comic book as well.
God, this whole podcast is like a Quentin Tarantino
movie. It's a meta joke, yeah.
All right, so yeah, we are talking about the Rough and Ready Show comic that came out in 2017. It was 6-issue limited series. It started in October 25th of 2017 and it ended March 28th of 2018, and was written by Howard Chaykin. But let's talk about the Rough and Ready Show for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
The original iteration of this ran from 1957 to 1963. I wasn't even born yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was first made by Hanna-Barbera Productions for NBC. The series followed the adventures of Rough, a smart and steadfast cat, and Ready, a good-natured and brave but not overly bright dog. It was presented by Screen Gems, the television arm of Columbia Pictures. It premiered in December of 1957 and ran for 50 episodes until February of 63, comprising 3 seasons. Hanna-Barbera created the Rough and Ready Show for their cartoon studio, then named HB Enterprises, and was their first series. The buddy theme had previously been explored in their Tom and Jerry theatrical shorts. But unlike Tom and Jerry, Rough and Ready aren't foes, but housemates and best friends. The series is notable as one of the earliest original animated television programs and a pioneering use of limited animation techniques. So, let's talk now that we know who the Rough and Ready people are.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about
why is the cat named Rough? That messed me up the entire book.
Yeah.
You figure someone Rough would be the dog.
You'd think
no.
So.
Yeah, so I was... Every time I saw Rough, I pictured the dog, but it was the cat anyway. And it was just one of the many problems. That might be the 108th worst thing about this book.
I want to talk to you about this Hanna-Barbera Beyond series.
Oh, yeah.
Hanna-Barbera Beyond consists of Dastardly and Muttley, which we'll be doing later this year when Top Gun comes out. A variety of DC meets Hanna-Barbera one-shots, which we've done on Source Material before. My favorite of all of these, Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles, where Snagglepuss is a gay gothic playwright in the 1960s during the Red Scare. The Flintstones by Mark Miller, which drove Ronnie Adams away from podcasting about comics. Future Quest presents The Jetsons, the aforementioned Rough and Ready Show, which we're talking about tonight. Scooby Apocalypse, which ran for several volumes.
Garbage.
I think went on for 3 years.
Garbage.
And another one that we did on here, I think the last
Wacky Raceland.
Yeah, we covered that, I think, around the time of the last Fast and Furious movie, because we called it Car Week. See?
There you go.
So everything ties together here on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. Have you dug into these? Have you read any of these?
I had to for a review gig I had, and I hated every second of it. I think these... You're familiar with string theory?
String theory? You know, I am familiar with it, sure.
The concept of, like, resources are limited, and... You know, they can only go so far. And I look at comic creators as resources. You know, we have a man like Howard Chaykin. Like him or hate him, I mean, he has a little bit of cachet in this industry. Why are we wasting him on this shit? I'm looking at, like, a Flash and, like, Speed Buggy. And it's like, we have Scott Lobdell and Brett Booth, and we're wasting them on this bullshit. I hate this stuff. This stuff is... I'm friends with several comic shop owners and former comic shop owners who pointed to these books as the reason why they're going out of business. Because DC foists these things on them. And you don't want to be on their naughty list. Both companies have naughty lists, by the way. And you don't want to be on it. So you have to buy this shit that sits on your shelf and then goes immediately into a 50-cent bin. Because nobody's asking for this shit. Nobody.
When we did Mark Miller's Flintstones. Now,
oh, that was that Russell guy. Russell.
Mark. Yeah, Mark Russell. Sorry.
Yeah, him. Yeah. Very precious.
There was a lot of modern... Mark Russell had something he needed to say, and he used the Flintstones to say it. And you had two... Poor Jesse was caught in the middle of me and Ronnie Adams having a fist fight on that podcast. Because Ronnie Adams is like, the Flintstones were pure comedy... They were there for entertainment. We don't need to corrupt them with political morass. We don't need to project our political agendas into something like the Flintstones, which has always been apolitical. You know, it was all in the family. That's what the Flintstones were, and I don't remember which came first.
The Honeymooners.
The Honeymooners. Yeah, that would be. I'm sorry. That would be the better one, and the more correct one. It was the Honeymooners. It was, you know, loudmouth, fat. Dad comes home to the housewife, and comedy ensues. Mm-hmm. Only we set it in a ridiculous Stone Age.
Sure,
and people had fun with it, and it was funny, and you know the old Flintstones. I mean, it clearly was a hit because we've never gotten away from the Flintstones. They've had at least two movies. There were several cartoon spinoffs. At least one porn. So
there's even a theme park, an abandoned theme park here in Arizona that is a Bedrock,
and it really
is horrifying. it is so scary looking. It's like in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's one of those like weird Arizona things, you know, like, you know, those books like Weird Nevada, Weird Every State. And there's a little town called Bedrock here, and it is all decked out to look like a Flintstones village, but the Flintstones moved out many, many years ago, so it is just horrifying. We also have a Santa Claus
abandoned
Arizona.
Town in its wake.
Yeah, we also have a Santa Claus Arizona that is also horrifying. So it's scary stuff.
So that's. And I'm using Ronnie as an example. Friend of the show, Ronnie Adams. We did the community podcast together. We just did the two Stumptown shows. And I love Ronnie. But Ronnie is very much like, can't we leave the innocent things innocent? Why must everything be a platform for which to foist your agenda onto people? Mm-hmm. And then there's my argument, which is, why can't something be elevated by a discussion of modern topics? So, just as an example, there was a lengthy... uncomfortable, traumatizing discussion about polyamory that came out of the Flintstones book.
Because that's needed.
and look, and that's the debate, right? Is this really necessary? Is it necessary to do it in the Flintstones? No. And where I'm going with this in a very long, drawn out way is what you were saying about, like, did anyone want any of this? Did anyone want a gay gothic playwright Snagglepuss in the midst of the Red Scare? No. Mm. Did I enjoy that story? Yes, but I'm a fucking weirdo.
I'm of the school of thought of, like, if a writer is sitting down with his editor and the first words out of their mouth is, wouldn't it be funny if... ...
Yeah.
The answer is always no.
Right.
The answer is always no, think of something else. And I feel like these Hanna-Barbera things are right out of that playbook.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like I use the word agenda, and I think when
100%.
And I haven't see the here's the problem though. This isn't totally consistent. Like there was absolutely an agenda with Snagglepuss. There was absolutely an agenda with Flintstones. There wasn't with Wacky Raceland. Wacky Raceland, they tried to turn that into Mad Max Fury Road.
That was awful.
See, I know somebody on this network who would disagree with you 100%, thought it was the best movie of that year.
Oh, I'm not. I never seen the movie. I'm talking about Wacky Raceland.
Oh, Wacky Raceland was utterly unreadable.
Oh, boy. That's the first review that I actually noped out on. Like, I was supposed to review that book, and I read the book. I read it twice. I started writing, and I wrote the guy who I was writing it for. I'm like, dude, I can't do it. And he's like, yeah, nobody can do it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it was unreadable. It was completely impossible to follow. Oh, it was an ugly book. But there was no agenda in it. They just tried to turn, you know, it was like, what if we did Wacky Raceland, but we did it like with a Fury Road motif, which is, it's, you know, dystopian and all this other shit going on. And it was like, okay, like, I get
violent. Yeah.
It's like what you were saying. It's like, wouldn't it be funny if, like, it's like, let's take this thing that is pure and innocent and let's turn it into this other thing. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And it's funny because I only agreed to do that one because I got Wacky Races mixed up with the Laugh Olympics. I was like, oh, I remember that. That was pretty funny. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, this is not that show.
It did inspire me to watch Wacky Races with my kid, which, you know, I had, especially back when we did this. That's Wacky Races came out in 2016. Sure. So that's got to be 2016, 2017 when we did the book. It wasn't too long after that. And I watched, you know, so that was 4 or 5 years ago, and I watched that with my kids. And they thought it was funny, but that's, you know, it was meant for them.
Sure. Nothing wrong with the cartoon. It's silly stuff.
All right, so this Rough and Ready show that comes out of the same mindset of the Flintstones and Snagglepuss and whatnot, you know, it's let's use this as a platform to editorialize about something. And in this particular case, the Rough and Ready show, Howard Chaykin is making a comment about Hollywood and spin doctoring and fame, and he seems to have an issue with all of it. He seems to hate it. And he uses this to comment on those things negatively. I'm not entirely sure it works. We'll talk about it. But before we do, what is Howard Chaykin known for? Because I don't really know anything about him.
Where I first ran into Howard Chaykin was with American Flag, which was an independent series, very, very politically motivated and minded. It's from the 80s. It definitely reads like something out of the 80s. And Howard Chaykin, you know, people talk about Rob Liefeld, right? And they say, like, you know, he peaked and he never got better. For me, Howard Chaykin is he peaked and he never got better. And he peaked with the same gimmick. It's satire, which back in the 80s, maybe that carried a little bit of weight. Maybe it was a little edgy. Maybe it was a little risky. But in current year, as I don't know if you know this, it is current year. In current year, satire is just like old. It's not edgy. It's not fresh. It's just like, it's looked more at, I think it's more looked at as cynicism now, which is like, who wants to read 6 damn issues of just cynicism?
Right.
Because it's trying to, and it's like, who is this preaching to? Like everything you just said, this is like Hollywood's bad. Can we gather 5 people on this planet who would disagree with that sentiment?
Not only that,
but
this is 6 issues at what, 32 pages an issue? This couldn't have been done in one shot. Like like the point got made in 1 or 2 issues of this thing, and this went on for another 4 issues for a grand total of 6. And it's like, you don't need that much canvas space to paint this picture that Hollywood is bad.
Right? Could you imagine waiting 6 months, half a year, for this story to end?
Right.
No.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what you said about your comic book owner friends, your comic book store owner friends, about, like, you know, this stuff just sits on their shelves and no one buys it. And it's like, you know, when you think about limited series, right? Like, this is really going to date me, but I was thinking about, like, G.I. Joe meets the Transformers. That every issue ended on a cliffhanger.
Absolutely. There was a reason to pick up the next one.
Right. There was four issues. They told a tight story, and you were like eager for the next one to come out because you wanted to know what was going to happen next and eventually how the story was going to end.
Sure.
I didn't care about that while I was reading this. I'm like, every I just issue, wanted it to end.
Every issue ended in a way that it could have just ended.
Yeah.
I just would have been done with it. It's like, okay. Because the ending we do get, and we'll get there, is like, it's like pants on head ridiculous. It is just, it's insulting.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, if you're listening to me talk, you know that I cannot get to the point. This story can't get to the point because the point it wants to make isn't worth the trip. It's really, really bad.
All right, so issue number one. And my summaries are coming directly out of Comic Vine, and this is not going to... Now, I know, like, I've, on a couple of these shows, I've kind of gone page by page over things because there were some details that I won't retain from having read them, so I kind of go through the comic book again so that we can talk about certain things as I see them. And go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Let's talk about that. There's nothing like that in this book. We're just going to have a brief conversation about each issue and get the fuck out of here. boy, there's some podcasts you do because you're passionate. There's some podcasts you do because it's on the schedule. This there is the latter. Give it just as an aside. Do you find that with X-Labs where like you've chosen to go every single day and you tackle an issue a day, and do you find yourself at times going, "Well, this is a part of X of 10, so fuck it, I got to do it, but I don't want to."
Oh yeah, absolutely, okay. Absolutely. I mean, we did the I did the full Fallen Angels 6-issue miniseries, which was really, really bad. And it's one of those where like everybody listening knew it was bad because like my numbers would be pretty steady until Fallen Angels Day, and it would drop. an actual like sizable percentage. It's like, wow, nobody wants to hear about this one, but in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yep. Like I said, it's on the schedule, it's gonna happen. Kicking and screaming. In the golden age of television, Ruff and Reddy were on top of the entertainment world until the world turned and they were forgotten. Now Ruff is a washed up television actor. Reddy is a clerk in an upscale grocery store. Can a hungry young agent convince these two one-time partners to make a comeback and convince the world that it wants to see the famously infamous dog and cat comedy team back in the spotlight? Don't miss it if you can. Okay, so this first issue, there's a lot of preamble about who they were. Like, it actually doesn't start off too bad.
No, it doesn't.
I really like the artwork in this. Let me say that right up front. This is sort of that semi-photorealistic Kingdom Come type artwork to start off with. It's a little juvenile, a little comic booky. It's not quite as Kingdom Come-ish, but it feels more painted and photorealistic than the average comic book. And it's probably the best aspect of this book.
I'd say so.
So we get a kind of history of who these guys were. And they're kind of like a Laurel and Hardy. I think somebody else described them as like another like 50s comedy duo whose name escapes me at the moment. But they're kind of like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This was back
Martin and Lewis.
That's the ones Martin and Lewis. And so Hollywood worked differently in the 50s. You basically signed a contract. It'd be like now if you signed a contract with Disney, and so you sign a 3-picture deal with Disney. Disney puts you in 3 of their movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And this was before the era of the $200 million budget. So they used to make movies fairly on the cheap. They made a lot of them, and they get them into theaters where you would get a newsreel, a cartoon.
Yeah, you'd spend all Saturday there. Yeah,
right. And so again, these were not the 3-hour motion picture features of modern times. It was a whole other thing then, and these guys were a part of, you know, like if you think about like the Three Stooges, you know, now we know the Three Stooges is like, you know, you'd see them on American classic movies or you know, Turner classic movies or something like that, but you'd see them in a collection. The Three Stooges bits used to just be their own movies.
Yeah, 2 reelers, 20 minutes.
Right. The Marx Brothers, Duck Soup, stuff like that. That's all from that era, and that's what they're kind of lampooning here with Ruff and Reddy. And that's all fine.
Sure.
I'm drawn into the book. Like, I you know, like we started off this conversation with "Oi, this book," and you and I talked offline about "Oi, this book." But it starts strong. Like, I like the setup.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a smart way to do it. If we have to do it, it's a good way to do it. And because, I mean, I didn't know who Ruff and Reddy were. You know, I'm not, I guess I'm not too totally knowledgeable about old cartoons, but even so, I would think I would have recognized the name, but I did not. So it's nice to get, and I mean, it's not their actual, you know, history, because we are treating these characters as though they are real characters and not drawings, first of all. So it is a, it's a narrative canonical sort of a telling of their story here, which actually serves to set a foundation for everything that's to come, for better or worse.
So I'm going to tell you about where I knew I was in trouble with the story, because it starts the first couple of pages. You know, you're seeing, they're giving you the history, and you're watching, there's clips of them, or you know, painted clips of them, like filming different things, filming different black and white movies, and then, you know, and then they get to this one
being
panel.
In the business. Yeah,
they get to this one panel where our director yells cut, and then they start kind of bickering with each other. And then, you know, they're in, like, craft services. And I knew we were in trouble right here. Because of this joke. Two girls, two cups.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming you know what that's a reference to?
I sure do.
You ever watch that, by the way? Did you take the test?
Yeah.
I've tried. I can't get through it. It's gross.
We actually conducted the test at a job I used to have, and I worked around truckers, so a different breed, you know.
Sure.
And we had guys in. And it's like, hey, you got to check out this video, and a lot of them couldn't get through it. Had a warehouse guy though who wanted to put it on over and over and over again.
There was always 1 out of 100 people had to find the full length video somewhere,
and film it with their phone so they can rewatch it later.
Yeah, there's always that one guy that like discovers something about himself he didn't know was there. anyway, so this goes on, and you know, you see them kind of bickering, and it starts to lose me here because. First of all, they keep doing the ampersand, star, dollar sign for cursing.
Yeah. And they do it a lot.
And it's so often it breaks up the dialogue to where it's not totally intelligible at times. And I don't know what they're saying. So I tended to just sort of gloss over it, skip over it, like, ugh, let's just move on. And then I'd miss stuff.
And the thing about that is, I mean, I don't want to call this a mature book. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we find out that the dog, Reddy, he has an addiction to eating shit.
Like you do.
I mean, because he goes to an AA meeting later on, and he says, my name is Reddy, and I'm a coprolalic. And if you own a dog, you might have one who has coprophagia, which is eating shit. And he later talks about, you know, not being able to leave the left behinds alone. So, I mean, we have a whole arc about how he eats shit, and yet we are censoring curse words. I don't know.
Yeah. So, the thing that seems to have set them on the path to break up, to where Reddy falls into a gutter and Ruff kind of circles the drain in a career that he gets steady work, but it isn't as fulfilling. They'll never be as famous or as fulfilled as they are in this moment.
Yeah.
And the thing that seems to break them up is they're bickering. They're at it like a Ticker Day parade of some sort, like a Macy's Day parade, and they're bickering with each other, and the dialogue goes, you know, it's pretty clear, they love me and they fear you. You know what else is clear? I didn't stop using a litter box just so I could work with someone who thinks it's a midnight snack. You call me Felix again, and I'll, yeah, you what? And then, like, yeah, like this dialogue doesn't flow at all.
It doesn't. It doesn't. It feels like it's almost trying to be like old timey, like what you'd get like in a snappy like noir sort of thing, where it's, And you're talking
about you, kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels kind of like that, but that doesn't work in regular conversation, and it certainly isn't pleasant to read.
Nah. I was having a hard time with this at this point. We're only on issue one. Yeah. But, you see, these kids, so they're in trouble now because they think that because they're not mic'd, they think nobody can hear what they're saying, and so they're bickering with each other, and they're not, you know.
Didn't think of the deafs.
Right, and so, like, apparently deaf kids read their lips, and now they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So they get fired. They get fired, and then the next thing you see is Ruff, like, slapping an actor around. Like, he's filming a movie, and he slaps an actor. And it says, it was a different time, the 60s, after the relatively quiet and nearly somnolent 50s. This decade started with brutality. And here's where we get our Snagglepuss thing. You know, there was a lot of this with the DC stuff. Like, there was Huckleberry. Like, I made a huge deal about doing Huckleberry Hound and Green Lantern because I thought it was hilarious that they would use that character to, like, talk about the plight of the black man in the 60s or the 70s, whenever that was.
Yep.
So we get a little bit of that here, a little commentary about the decades previous. Yeah, and there's more of them getting yelling at. And so, like, like I said, I was having a hard time following kind of the plot of what was going on with them. But you get these pictures of, like, the TV guide and the magazine covers, and they look pretty.
Sure.
It kind of breaks up the story a bit and took me out of it, but I liked what they look like. You know, as far as visuals, I was interested in what I was looking at.
Oh, very strong, yeah.
So more of them doing different things and it not working out. And you get to see their career sort of going down. You know, you see Ruff doing Death of a Salesman and, like, a Law and Order type thing. And I think what they were trying to say about Reddy was he tried to go solo too, but nothing he did worked out. Like, and everyone thought he sucked.
Yeah, he was, like, doing, like, stand-up bits, and it wasn't working, and...
Yeah.
It's... Yeah. And then we... Don't we see them, like, at, like, a comic convention or something?
That's later.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
All right. So the last thing that happens in this issue that gets set up is we have Pamela from the mailroom who gets promoted.
Mm, now spunky, she's an agent. PR exec, yeah. Or yeah. Agent, yeah.
So now she's promoted, and she has an idea that she's going to make her bones by bringing Ruff and Reddy back to the modern fans. She thinks that there's gold in them hills with these two, and she's going to get them back together, and she's going to push them, and they're going to be big stars. And that's basically where we're going with this comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, terrific. So what did you think of issue number one?
The first half was okay. Actually, the whole first issue wasn't that bad. When I got to the little page break to go to the next issue, I'm like, oh, okay. I at the time, though, in fairness, I thought it was a 4-issue mini. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm a quarter of the way through. No, I was not.
Yeah.
And this is definitely the best of it, which isn't saying much. I still don't care about these characters. I mean, I don't know why anybody would. I really don't know why this exists.
Yeah, I'm with you where I think it's a strong start. I think if you're up for a Hanna-Barbera book that lampoons Hollywood, you know, if you pick this up at a newsstand or who picks them up at a newsstand now? Mm-hmm. If you pick it up in a comic book store and you're like, okay, I'm up for this. I want to see how the story goes. What do they do with these guys? Strong start. Really strong art. Strong start story-wise. A little hard to follow, but not enough to where I was turned off in the book. And I want to see what happens next. So we're not dead yet.
Not yet.
Issue number two. Ruff and Reddy have hit the skids. Plunging from A-list to huh? To wait, who? And finally, who cares? Next up for these pathetic has-beens on the treadmill to oblivion is the convention circuit, where their agent turns a potential disaster into a goldmine of publicity, and the comeback begins. So I think it's this one is where they go to the comic book convention.
Gotcha.
And isn't this where we get the same gimmick of them running up against the other dog and cat act?
Oh, how many times did they friggin' do that?
Yeah, and it wasn't funny the first time.
No, it was not.
You know, like, I can almost see doing it once just to have, like, a nemesis in the book, but, like, how many times are they going to do the same bit?
Oh, Lord. Yeah, this is... Who were down and dirty, were they?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so there's, like, this other dog and cat comedy troupe who... And the entire damn story, they're just going back and forth at each other saying that they stole each other's bits. And it's like, really? No. I'm actually looking... Right now I'm on Comic-Con. Are you familiar with Comic-Con?
Mm-mm.
Comic-Con is a place you can go if you want to look up sales figures for these very books. And I'm looking to see where the Rough and Ready show wound up. And let's see here. Where are we? Rough and Ready show. Number one, the one that we just talked about, was the 200th best-selling book of the month.
Okay.
DC shipped 8,777 copies. For a number one issue, under 10,000 copies for a DC comic. And it only gets better from there.
Okay.
Oh, my God. So that's October, November, December. January, February, March would be our sixth issue here. Let's see. Rough and Ready. How many copies did Rough and Ready number six sell? I don't want Buffy the Vampire. There we are. The Rough and Ready show. Okay, it is the 351st best-selling book. It sold under... It shipped under 3,000 copies.
Wow.
Under 3,000.
Are they, at this point, just contractually obligated to finish a series they start? Like, they can't just cut it?
No, they have cut. They cut... there was a story called Vigilante Southland, which was absolute garbage. And that was a six-issue miniseries. They cut it at three. There was also Prez, the new Prez comic with the girl president. That was supposed to be either a 12-issue miniseries or an ongoing, and that thing got canned at like two or three. So, yeah, they could do it. They could can these books, but I can't... Under 3,000 copies.
Wow. Yeah, people were done with this after one issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're not.
So if you own a copy of Rough and Ready Show, you probably have a pretty valuable comic because nobody has it.
It's great.
Yeah, you have a very, very valuable, more valuable than any current Deadpool or Harley Quinn book because those are all over the place.
Yep. I have your Gwenpool episode, by the way, on my podcast here, ready to listen to at some point. That and the Fantastic Four, I want to see what you said about them.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, the Gwenpool one might be a surprise.
Okay. All right, so the comic opens. We get some more of Reddy kind of looking back at their old films and reminiscing and just sort of thinking about better times. And the meat of this thing really starts with them going to meet with the agent, Pamela, who sits them across each other at a table, and they're like, look, I want to get you guys together. And they're trying to figure out if they should do it. And at first, Ruff is like, yeah, no, pass. Hmm. And there's a lot of Ruff, like, looking at Reddy and going, Reddy's a buffoon. I can't work with Reddy. Reddy's a dope. I don't want to do it. But we're going to learn later on, I think in this issue, that Ruff kind of has to take the work.
Yeah. He doesn't have a choice, yeah.
Yeah, he invested his money in something that went south, and he lost all his money.
A Fonzi scheme.
Yeah. Okay, can we talk about that? How this book changes the names of a lot of things? Like, and some of it's okay, and some of it is just hard to read and not funny.
Yeah.
But, like, Ponzi isn't a copyrighted name. It's a word that describes a type of scheme. Why did they need to change it to a Fonzi scheme?
Because I think they were implying that Fonzi, Henry Winkler, was actually responsible for it. Because the guy said, like, Henry ran away with your money or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, it was a Fonzi scheme. Cue laugh track.
But I was going to say, is that supposed to be a pun?
It has. I think it would have to have been. It wasn't good.
That's terrible.
It's, yeah. I mean, that's bad even considering the rest of the stuff we got in this book.
Yeah, that's, ugh. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have to take a bath now. So neither one of them are, you know, Ruff doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to work with Reddy anymore. Reddy doesn't want to do it because, and here's Reddy's whole thing throughout the rest of this book. He quit acting. One, he wasn't good at it. He wasn't good without Ruff. And things sort of being shaped around his, you know, kind of like Paul Heyman, you know, he would accentuate the positives, he would minimize the negatives. Mm-hmm. But without anyone willing to do that for him, he was not succeeding. So he just started working regular jobs. But what he realized about himself was that if he didn't have the riches from acting, then he lived an okay life. Once he had too much money, that's when he got... That's when he went off the rails and went on benders. Yeah. So he's like, I don't want to upset the apple cart of my perfectly zen life. I don't want to do this. And then he gets fired from his job at like Walmart or whatever. Yeah. At which point now he has to because he has no money.
Yeah.
So this whole second issue is basically getting them to finally accept that they're going to get back together and they're going to do this thing with Pamela because they don't really have a choice. That's this whole second issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's it. We needed 66 pages to get here.
And so they're at Wicked Planet Comic Expo.
Yeah, Wicked World. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like Wizard World.
Yeah. And they're fighting at the table. They're bickering. And this is where we see...
Down and Dirty?
This is where we see Down and Dirty. This is the first time they do this bit. This is where they also admit that Reddy started off on a trio called Reddy, Willing, and Able.
Whew. Yeah. Did we talk about Rough Sex yet?
No. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, they show that, you know, as they're talking about the decline of their careers here, they show the other partners that they had been with. And right. Like you mentioned here, we had the Ready, Willing, and Able before Willing and Able, you know, shit-canned Ready. But Ruff was with a woman named, like Veronica Sex or some shit.
Yeah.
And it's their team-up name was Ruff Sex. You get it? It's like, it's funny, right? Ruff Sex? Oh, God. Oh, God, Chaykin, what happened to you, buddy?
Yeah. So we end with, they're at a kosher diner deli like you do in Hollywood, and Pamela comes and she tells them both to shut up, and she's like, I'm in control here, and
you listen. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is at the very end of the issue where they finally decide to work with her. All right. So that's issue number two. Any thoughts?
No.
Like, we haven't gone off the cliff yet, but we're definitely inching towards
it. On the precipice.
Yeah. We are definitely Thelma and Louise-ing down the desert road. I'm still into it, though. First issue was establishing who these people are. Second issue was establishing why they're going to get back together and why they don't have any choice. So we're still in the first 10 minutes of the movie, right? So now we're
scary enough.
So, yeah, you know, issues one and two are the first act of your three-act movie.
Okay,
so I'm into it, right? I'm like, let's see what happens. Like, now they have to. We've had our inciting event. So let's see what they do with it. Now we're into the second act here. We're into the main bulk of the story. Theoretically, these next two issues.
Meat and potatoes.
Right. Issue number three. Envy, self-loathing, jealousy, self-destruction, backstabbing. And that's just Monday. God. In the business they call show. Ruff and Reddy are not ready for this maelstrom of malice that's a daily affair in the entertainment industrial complex. With Pamela Chiron, their increasingly hard-bitten agent finds herself cleaning up one mess before she's finished burying another. it's hell out there in Hollywood. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So issue number three, we're doing a lot of, like, hey, these guys are back, right? Well, who are they? So, okay, so this is where the comic takes a bit of a turn. Because at this point, we've mostly been settling on Rough and Ready and the kind of... And Chaykin kind of uses them to sort of make fun of the 50s Hollywood studio actor comedy partner types.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the fallen actor trope. That's all he's done up to this point. Issue number three starts in earnest with him just making fun of talk show Hollywood. Over and over and over.
For the rest of the entire series.
This never ends. And it stops it stopped being funny after this first bit. Like, I got it. Like, he did it once, and I was like, okay, that's kind of amusing, you know, making fun of the modern talk show Hollywood circuit and how vapid it is. Cool. And then it never ended, and it went all the way to issue number six, and I was ready to throw my fucking tablet.
Your hardcover omnibus Rough and Ready show collection?
My tablet that I was reading it on. Ready to throw it in the street. Ugh.
Yeah, this does not know how to let go of an idea. And again, I mean, in fairness to Chaykin here, he had six damn issues to fill with, like, two issues worth of story. But boy, it got old quick. And this, like, goes to those, like, the sort of kind of like real things, but not like, we had, like, instead of the Jimmy Kimmel show, we had like the Jamie Camel show.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that got old real quick.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I like this panel. So I don't know what you would call this. You're a little bit better with technical terms than I am. But where they split the page into three rectangular panels across.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like the widescreen sort of?
Yeah. Yeah. And so the first one is them on a talk show. They're on a panel of some sort. And Ruff says, two in the beep, one in the twink. Mm. So it's like one in the stink, two in the pink, or however you want to do it. One in the pink, the two in the stink. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're doing here. We're doing the shocker. Mm-hmm. And because, see, I don't know if you know this or not, but people are dumb, Chris.
Oh.
people are oafish lemmings, and they laugh and clap at everything. Yay! R2-D2 and I clapped!
Are these the ordinary people? Oh, wait, that's not... We're not going to talk about that for several months.
That's July! So Howard Chaykin has to take time out of this book to remind you, the audience, that the audience is dumb.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you're still dumb.
Two in the bleep, one in the twink. And I thought it said pants. And this woman says, Jewish guys, am I right? And I'm immediately reminded of a Family Guy bit where Peter decides he wants to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. And he starts wanting to do anal sex with Lois. Mm-hmm. And there was something about, like, whether or not anal sex was kosher.
It's a stereotype I didn't know about.
Yeah.
Oy vey.
Yeah. Apparently, Hollywood, Jews, and anal sex is a thing.
Oh. Who knew? Not me.
not I said the fly. Yes, every good Hollywood producer has their own private collection of Planet of the Gapes pornos.
Okay.
I just needed to say Planet of the Gapes. Anyway, moving on. So this goes on for a while. We get a lot of this, something happening on television and laughter at the bottom because people are dumb.
Yeah, the laugh tracks were in here and they were all over the... That was another gimmick that they wouldn't let go of. It was just repeated over and over.
And like, if you're not... Like, I'm not like really big into modern mainstream Hollywood fare. Like, that's not the media that I typically consume. So, like, I knew, like, I'm aware of certain things, but not enough to make this funny for me or entertaining. So, like, this one panel here where they're doing car karaoke, you know, like, that's a thing that happens on one of these stupid late night shows.
Yeah.
And I'm mildly aware that that happens because I talk to people in the world who watch this stuff. But apparently Taken thinks this is so popular and so many people know about it and it's so funny to make fun of that that's one of the panels. Yeah. Is him doing car karaoke. Reddy is.
Oh.
This is where this series started to give me a headache.
And it was like so scattershot too, because it's like up to this point, I mean, we did some time jumping, of course, because we did, you know, the 30s were a hell of a time, the 40s were a hell of a time, the 50s, oh, that was a hell of a time. We got that, but I mean, this is where just like we've got these scenes on the TV, and then you've got scenes of them just there, then there's scenes on the TV, and then there's scenes of them in another office. You don't know what order any of this shit's happening in. It's just all over the place.
If you're watching the movie, this is yet another montage. This is we've got some upbeat music playing of them making various television appearances and doing commercials, and oh look, they're successful. It's working.
You're the best around.
Nothing's ever going to bring you down.
There you are.
You're the best. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
My baby takes the morning train.
Right. We're not dating ourselves too much here. trying to think of the one from Ghostbusters 2. Anyway, moving on. So it finally stops. The madness finally stops. And there's this bit here with the old man in the wheelchair, and then Pamela drives up, and we're at, you know, we're briefly out of the montage of them, their celebrity rising from the ashes, and then we're on this television show, Roy Raymond Detective. This is kind of like a current affair, I guess. That's what they're making fun of here. Like that's a fucking like a timely joke.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Maury Povich has moved on to other things.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Geraldo works for Fox. Maury Povich is no longer doing A Current Affair. What the fuck? Like, it's a weird one to make fun of.
It should have been, like, Fernwood Tonight or something.
Yeah. I'm Roy Raymond. I'm on TV, and I'm a detective. Ugh. Mm. So, but this is a setup to get, hey,
gotcha.
Look, it's Dog and Cat, or whatever the fuck.
Down and Dirty.
Down and Dirty. Yep, they're here. And oh, look, what are they going to do again? They're going to fight. They're going to argue. Oh, boy.
Yep.
And then we have this. Then we flash over to the agent who's trying to get them gigs, and she's working with like casting directors and stuff. And the one's like, no thanks, no thanks, no thanks. And that's all going to be a setup to later on. There's going to be controversy, and then they're all going to say,
page.
And they're all going to agree to it and say, yes, get it? Because Hollywood sucks, Chris. I don't know if you know that or not.
I'm starting to get that impression. I hope it's not on the test, though.
Yeah. We have a subplot here of this is of Ruff talking to the Roy Raymond guy and like, hey, get my money back. And so he does. Mm-hmm. Yay.
Because who, like, why? Who gives a shit if he gets his money back?
Yeah, how does that add to the plot here? Does he? Yeah, are we building to him like walking away from Reddy because like, oh, I don't need you anymore. I've got my money. Why do you keep leaving me? Like, is that where we're going with this? Like, because that would be dramatic at least. Like, you know, Reddy. Like, if they had written into Reddy's character that he, you know, is codependent and Ruff keeps leaving him, and it's like, it's you. You're the reason I'm in such shambles. You're why I eat shit. Sure. No. Just another thing that happens. And oh, hey, our third appearance of Down and Dirty.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway. And so this goes on and on and on. There's something about I think this is where there's a panel here of, it looks like Ruff giving FMZ, which is supposed to be TMZ. Get it? Get it?
Oh.
I swear to God, they should have written get it on every page.
They should have.
And so he gives the TMZ.
That's a joke, you see.
Yeah. And so he gives the TMZ guy like an envelope full of video, audio, and testimony. Okay.
This isn't the old man doing it. This is Ruff doing it. Yeah, okay. Because when the old man does it, then we get the, hey guys, old technology's old.
Oh, the VHS bit, yeah. So more stuff with the parrot, who I think his name is Willing.
Oh, he's from Ready, Willing, and Able, yeah.
Yep. Okay. And so then literally within the same issue, we're right back to her talking to all the, like, the casting agents and whatnot. And they're like, oh, yeah, now one in every turn in the exact same order that we saw it in before. What is it, the 9-grid panel that you hate so much?
Yes.
They're all like, yeah, we're in. Ugh.
And now that since there's controversy, all the agents want to pick up Rough and Ready.
Yep. And then the next thing we see is Reddy's on yet another bender. He is drunk on the floor, shirtless, with his tongue hanging out, and Ruff's there. And, you know, we start to see that Reddy is having difficulties, and Ruff is just like, I've had it with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been back together for 5 minutes, and you can't hold it together. And so Reddy goes to a meeting, and he starts talking about being a copraholic.
Yep.
And Ruff is there with him to support him. And this is where they meet Aldo Schraft.
Crafty Schraft.
Yep, Crafty Schraft. Who's going to steal them away from Pamela now that they're a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the major plot point of this thing that ends the issue, is that Pamela, who worked so hard to bring them up out of obscurity and poverty and put them back on the map as a modern, relevant act, after she's done all of this for them, the thanks she gets is they screw her and leave her, and they go with Schrafty. Crafty Schrafty.
I'm starting to think that Hollywood is a little bit crooked.
Yeah. Everyone's in it for themselves, wouldn't you know?
It shouldn't be that way.
No, people should be honorable and loyal.
I think so, especially in Hollywood.
We there fucking get it, Shaken. Who hurt you? Why are you so mad?
Well, I think he did do some animation. I think he wrote for some boy, like maybe like the real Ghostbusters, a G.I. Joe or something, or Transformers, something like that, back in the 80s, I think, or something. I'm pretty sure Shaken does have some history in cartoons.
So issue number 4, in the rough and tumble dog eat dog world of business of show, betrayal is just another fact of life. We got it. But when Rough and Ready betray the one person who believed in them, they'll be hell to pay and pay again and again. So this is a revenge story. It's not a redemption story. The story of Rough and Ready in 6 issues is they were famous, then they fell apart, but somebody believed in them, but they betrayed her, and just when they thought they were on top of the world and things couldn't get any better, she undercuts them and they fall on their face. 6 issues. That's the story.
That's it.
Oh boy. Issue number 4. The cover of this thing. Sleeping dogs and cats lie. Oh, they lie. They lie.
Oh, like not tell the truth. Oh.
Yep.
And I was incorrect about his Hollywood times here. He actually wrote several episodes of The Flash, the old 80s, the John Wesley Shipp or whatever version?
Yeah, the 90s on CBS.
1990, yeah. And he wrote a couple of episodes of Mutant X, which was something I knew what it was, but I never saw it.
I want to say the critically acclaimed guys talked about it on their podcast, maybe Cancel Too Soon or something. Anyway, we open up with, we can't call it variety because everything has to be a parody in this book. Every single fucking thing.
Satire is funny. Ha ha ha.
So it can't be variety. It has to be vagary. Get it? And it can't be Steven Spielberg. It has to be Max Spielberg.
Oh,
and he's mad. He's mad about the Marvel movies because on this vagary cover, there's a headline that reads, Superhero Still Rule Box Office in Bulgaria. And he's like my father-in-law. He's mad that everything's being rebooted or whatever, or restarted. Because there's another headline that reads, Laverne and Shirley redo in the works. Get it? He's mad that there's no new ideas in Hollywood that he's making fun of.
Oh, that's a heck of an observation. I've never thought of that. Hollywood's out of ideas. I've never heard anyone say that before.
He's the only one saying it.
This Chaykin's brilliant.
He is.
Wow, I need to subscribe to his newsletter. I need to read more of his stuff.
There is a dangerous pattern that's developing with me and you on this podcast. We keep reading books by writers who need to be punched in the dick. Hard.
Yes. Repeatedly.
Just write entertaining stories, you fucknuts. Anyway, the whole point of this splash page, as it were, where they're mocking Variety, is that Schraft gives newbie the shaft. And so it's talking about how they dumped, like you would in a trade magazine, they're talking about how Rough and Ready dumped Pamela for Schraft.
Yeah.
And this goes on. And then we get a bunch of panels of like cell phone things. And so there's like Facebook and TMZ and all kinds of stuff. And I think one of them might have been like whatever the picture one is that everyone likes. I always make fun of, like, I'm not a 10-year-old girl. I'm not going to be on that. Instagram. And then there's more of the television things. We're back to this again. This goes on for forever.
Ever.
But now they're on the talk shows, like, they're mocking the Daily Show here with Trevor Noah. It's the Everyday Show with Travis Moon. Like, I'm just getting angry now and want to knock stuff off my desk. Just fucking stop already.
You know, there was a Hollywood writer who, I think he was on Twitter as, like, the anonymous writer or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because he was like really talking truth here, and one of the things he tweeted out that was taken as quite controversial, but it's very very it's very very benign, and it's also very very funny. It said, "Never confuse oh I got that reference for comedy," because I mean that how much of this shit is oh I get that reference? It's like that's not funny,
right?
That is not a joke.
Like, I get this, like, this one panel, it says bro comedy, but it's the HBO logo.
It's the HBO logo. It's not even wordplay. It's not even a pun. It is the HBO logo with different letters.
Right, and in the background...
It has the circle in it.
It says, get real with Will Maher. Because real time with Bill Maher, get it?
Oh,
do Lord. You get it? Mm. It fucking hurts.
Oh, man.
I can feel the tumor in my brain growing from reading this.
I can't wait for the WWE Network to give us the Peacock so I can watch Workspace, because they have a lot of deleted scenes put back into the Working Workspace show. It's a good show, yeah.
You could also watch Punky Brewster, another remake reboot.
That's Girl with Mismatched Shoes in this book.
Yeah.
Girl with Mismatched Shoes and Glomer.
Yeah. Okay, so 97 panels of them talking about how they dumped Pamela for Schraft. Great.
Which so they could. We knew that last issue.
Right. So then Pamela comes and sees them, and you know, she ends up giving him the finger and walking away, and she goes back to the office. We're back to the office with Rough and Ready. Mm. they're talking business. Mm-hmm. We're talking business, and stuff is happening. Not a lot. A lot of talking.
Just talking.
A lot of dialogue. Something with a monkey here.
Yeah, you know. Is this DC canon? Because we get an appearance from Detective Chimp.
Yeah. A very menacing looking chimp here. That's right, Detective Chimp at your service.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So is this in DC canon? God, I hope not. We need a new crisis just to wipe this shit out.
All right, we're back to like talk show panels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Rough and Ready are talking to each other. They look like they're on a game show called Darwin Got It Right All Along.
And oh, where they get slime dumped on them or some shit?
Yeah, there's that. It's just going nowhere.
It's so bad.
And they're talking with Trafty again. I don't even... Oh, they're in, like, a Batman and Robin costume, and there's, like, laughing at the bottom, because I guess that's supposed to be funny.
It's hilarious, right?
Yeah. At the end of this, we have, Pamela's a whore, and she's always been a whore. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I know what this is. There was somebody trolling them, and it turns out it was her.
That's right, yeah, because she was spoofing their phone numbers and, like, texting, like, threats back and forth to them or something. Right. And so they were all ready to fight it out about, you know, oh, you're talking shit about me. Oh, no, you're talking shit about me. And then they found out that and it's funny because they say, if I'm remembering correctly, it's like, oh, it's just a troll. And Ruff goes, an old white man under a bridge?
Yeah.
Why does it matter if he's white?
White people are terrible. Don't you know that?
I do need my reminder. But an old white guy under a bridge. I never seen a troll named that or described that way. I think Mr. Chaikin has a problem.
And so then there's this bit with sex where I guess she's getting arrested and they're taking her away.
Did she steal his money or not?
Yeah, she stole his money. That's what that was.
Okay, because I remember, like, they said she stole his money, but then the money was gone again.
They were only able to get a portion of it back. They weren't able to get all of it back, is what happened.
Okay. So is she Fonzie?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the next thing is Pamela gets fired.
For the trolling,
yeah. And that's the end of that article. That's the end of that issue, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
That's not the end of the story.
No. God damn, we still have two more issues to go.
Yeah, like, if this was a 4-issue mini, we'd be done.
All right, so now she's fired. So now she's fired. She's been humiliated. She wants revenge.
And we all care about this character a lot, right? We want to see her story.
Yeah, over time, continue. We've really gotten to know Pamela well. And,
oh, I'm invested.
Attached to her. Absolutely.
I am invested. Yeah.
Whew! In the... Issue number 5. Before I do that, so all of these summaries that I've been reading on Comic Vine, they might have been written, they might have been written even better, and also these Wikipedia pages, had the authors been using Grammarly. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, spelling mistakes, while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. As a matter of fact, I bet Howard Chaikin could have used Grammarly to help write his script.
He should have.
So if you want to try your 30 days free of Grammarly, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network. Getgrammarly.com/W2M network for your free 30 days of Grammarly software. In the business of show, oh my god, stop with that fucking line already.
Before you do that here,
yes,
I'm on, you ever go to Comic Book Roundup?
I'm aware that it's a thing.
Okay, I usually refer to it as Comic Book Circle Jerk, because it is. I'm looking for the Rough and Ready show here to see what the reviews say. And someone rated the first issue an 8.8.
Wow.
An incredibly entertaining book for anyone who enjoyed The Flintstones or Who Framed Roger Rabbit. No. False. Incorrect.
I would not compare this to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I would only do that in the fact that I think we have humans living with animated characters. That's
okay, but that's like saying, like, if you liked BoJack Horseman, you would like the Rough and Ready show. Like, they're not the same thing, and the quality of writing in BoJack Horseman was much higher than this.
The site that I used to write for, Weird Science, they gave it a 4.5, which is far more accurate. Jeremy Daw, a friend of mine, wrote, "A sudden burst of plot at the end and Mac Ray's delightful art can't really hide the fact that approximately two-thirds of this issue is self-indulgent, obscure, and confusing. It's difficult to work out precisely who this comic is for, but it would seem it's really not for me. At times diverting, but never fully engaging, I'm afraid I can't recommend it."
So who is this for is a really great question. Like, I'm not, like, I mean, it reminds me of this kind of stuff we were talking about back when I dedicated an entire month to you picking books. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of that question of, like, well, who is this for? And, like, I'm not against the idea of niche books. I'm not against mm-hmm. the idea of, you know, out-of-the-box thinking in terms of story writing. And I'm really not against this idea either. I like the idea that, you know, like, I'm gonna write this comic book story that's going to satirize Hollywood and all the things I don't like about it. I think as a base idea, that's not bad, and that's something that I'd be interested in. But it does beg the question: who thought this was going to be a hit?
Well, like, I can tell you one guy who did. Whoever writes for Comic Book Bin gave issue 3 a 10 out of 10.
Okay. So these guys just want to be invited to the party.
They want their free stuff from DC. Yeah. Okay. 10 out of 10, which is to say it could not be any better than it is. It is perfect. False.
So, I don't know if you've, how much of Damn You Hollywood you've listened to. Probably not a lot, especially if you haven't seen the movies we talk about. Yeah, but we do an entire bit where we read through the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do it, because we think the critics are full of shit.
Oh, of course.
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yeah, they want to be invited to the party. You had it right there. It's and I've worked for sites that didn't play the game, and there were threats. So
your access goes away.
At DC would say, "Hey, we're not going to include you guys anymore." And really shows you what DC's in this for. And they're in it to put out bullshit like this and get high scores for it.
You and I, not to get too much off on a tangent here, but and I haven't heard the entire segment yet on the Jim Cornette Show or looked at the Observer Awards, but I do know that the majority of the Wrestling Observer Awards, as awarded by Dave Meltzer, went to AEW.
Yes.
And my issue with that was, just admit you're writing PR for this company and stop with the pretense that you're a journalist. Yes.
Like, you're unbiased and unconnected journalist, yeah.
I don't mind that you're a booster for AEW, but just stop trying to portray yourself as a middle-of-the-road journalist who's just reporting on objectively about things, because you're not. That's a lie.
Yeah.
And you know, and so, like, these comic book blogs and stuff, that some of these sites that you're talking about, I don't actually mind if they give 10 out of 10s for comic books and don't deserve them because they want to maintain their access. But then don't put out there that you're an objective news site either. They're like,
sure.
Just write it right in the masthead. We are here to promote the buying of comics.
Yeah. DC gave us this for free.
Issue number 5. In the business mm-hmm. of show, they say nothing succeeds like excess, and that imitation is the sincerest form of television. You ever just want to eat a gun after you read something? Imitation is the sincerest form of television. Who wrote this? In a flurry of days that make their heads spin, Rough and Ready find themselves spread all too thin in a slurry of pilots, while a bad decision comes back to haunt them like a blind date on a Saturday night. Okay.
What does that even mean?
That's a great question. You've never been on a blind date?
But they came back on a Saturday? What the fuck does that even mean?
That's a great question. I love this cover, though. Like, I don't want to seem like I'm, like it's all bad. This issue number 5 cover, at least one of the variants, which makes you think, like, this is going to get really intense. It's them tied up and chained to chairs and then dumped in a, you know, in a body of water filled with sharks. Mm. Like, ooh.
No, the art's very nice. It's probably not to everybody's style, but there is a lot of pop to the art. I'll give it that.
Yeah, the art is far and away the best part of this series.
For sure. It seems almost like Kyle Baker's work. It's good.
So there's an industry trade publication, you may have heard of it, called...
Vagary?
Variety? So we start off with another mock industry trade. This is Daily Vanity. Uh-huh.
What's that supposed to be?
At first I was like, it's Variety, and then I was like, no, wait, that's not right. I know that's not right, because I know that logo. I can't remember the name of it now. It's not the Hollywood Reporter. I'll think of it later.
Yeah, it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah, not really. I wanted to say Vanity Fair at first, and I'm like, no, wait a minute, that's like a fashion magazine.
That's a fashion mag, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this is talking about...
The Village Voice.
There you go. V for Vendetta.
Vesuvius.
Watchmen. Swamp Thing. Anyway, so they're talking about all these pilots that they're doing. They're doing shit tons of pilots now that they're, you know, famous. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they're on yet another talk show. It's like the bulk of this whole stupid thing. And then you see a bunch of clips of them like shooting stuff. So this is the bit where they're making fun of streaming services because they're shooting something for Amazon Prime, except that it says Athenian Primo.
Yeah.
And again, I want to knock stuff off my desk.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
And Retroflix and.
Yeah. Yep. We flash over to Pam, and she has a meeting with somebody. And then we're back to Zeb. Shoot up for the Guts Network. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see a close-up of Reddy, and he's shooting something called Unjustified Entitlement. And then we're back
on HBO.
What
was that supposed to be? Because that was on HBO. Was that supposed to be Curb Your Enthusiasm or something? Or
sure. Let's go with that.
Okay.
Look, if it's not The Wire, I don't know what it is. So we flash to a scene at Twink's Hot Dogs. I don't know
that's
why.
That's supposed to be Pink's?
Yeah.
Okay. Twink's.
And this is where we do the bit with the VHS tape.
That might actually help with the ending. That might help with the ending here. The big joke at the end.
Yeah. And then they're mocking South Park because sure, and police brutality because sure.
Mm-hmm.
I get that reference.
Oh my god, I get that reference.
Yep. Now we're doing Game of Thrones. Did you watch Game of Thrones, by the way?
No, I did not.
Great.
I'm just watching The Sopranos. I mean, that's how far back I am. So
I'm gonna be covering The Sopranos later this year when the movie comes out. There's a prequel movie that's
The Sons of Newark or whatever.
Yeah, The Many Saints of Newark. Yep.
If you need another voice on that, I'll do that.
Oh, sweet. So we have the sex tape thing that we're talking about here, and we're back to now they're doing
what was
something
the
on
sex
TV's,
tape anyway?
I don't know.
Did we even? We had the old man drop off a VHS tape at like a tabloid.
Right.
And the kid's like, is the video streaming in this box? Like, no, that's a VHS tape. Oh my god, I've never seen one of these before. You fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on.
So we're back and forth. Now we're in the limo with Traft. And he's like, oh, the network loves you guys. Da, 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 da. And then they go to San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Do we run into Down and Dirty again?
Let's see here. Yes! Number four!
God, this sucks.
And it ends with Reddy punching one of them in the face. Terrific. Yeah. And then one guy says, you're going to love this sex tape to TMZ. It's great. That's the end of that issue.
That's it.
And that's it. So if you're like, oh my god, I'm so hooked, I gotta see what happens in the last issue after all that. Like you can tell like how bad the series is getting when like I'm just like going page after page going and stuff happens. And so like we have run out of plot, we have run out of things, like now we're literally just doing jokes about the industry.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, this isn't even a story anymore. Yeah.
Right, and if you're in it for the jokes about the industry, that's fine and whatever, but like if you're like trying to figure out what the story is here, good luck.
Yeah, someone teach Howard Chaykin how to open a blog. Because that's all he needs.
Yeah. All right, issue number 6. We're almost done here. Misery loves company, and nothing succeeds like success. And once you put these two together, you've got Rough and Ready. Utterly miserable and a success that ruins their lives. Comedy gold. While comedy gold may be a bit much.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's overselling it. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, there was an ad. I don't know which iteration of this you read, but there was an advertisement for this of Superman. It says, Bendis is coming. At which point did you throw your book out the window?
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm still buying the books because I have like a full run since like the early 70s. But yeah, I haven't read them. As soon as I found out that Bendis was coming and he was coming with his bag of trick because he only has one, I was done. We're gonna reveal the secret identity. Okay, no, done.
I have his Man of Steel limited series for Superman from when he first came over to DC before he took over, I think, like Action Comics or whatever.
He took over both of them, Action and Superman. They relaunched Superman for him and gave him Action as well.
Right. So this was the lead into that, and I eventually want to read it and maybe even talk about it, but it's just sitting on the shelf waiting for me.
It'll take you about 8 minutes to read.
Terrific.
Because it is a Bendis book.
This is another one where it's like the art is great and the rest of it's kind of but yeah. You know, it's got the two of them in a field and they both got pistols and there's a heart behind them. Like I really like, there are some of these that I would actually like frame and hang on my wall. This is one of them. I really like this picture.
Yeah, I mean the art is definitely not anything we're complaining about here at all.
So to get attention, I guess Ruff like tried to swallow a canary and they spit it out.
Because Reddy's sponsor for eating shit was like a bird that sat on his shoulder to tell him not to eat shit.
Yep.
And then like Ruff tried eating the bird and then but spit him out and then he had like a little Band-Aid on his face.
Yep.
What the fuck are we doing here?
A lot of more of the same. By the way, this was my favorite one, and this has nothing to do with like politics or whatever. I just so stupid, and at this point they've now beat this to death, but there's one of Tucker Carlson on Fox News, only it's Fax News.
Mm-hmm, of course.
FAX. Like, we're not even doing fun wordplay here, we're just changing a letter.
Yeah.
And it's Pucker Slipson instead of Tucker Carlson.
There you go.
You're so witty.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who they're talking about. Gotta solve the friggin' riddles here. Jesus.
All right, conversation with Trafty here. And then the head of the network, I guess, was gone, and I guess Pamela came back.
Well, she took a job with what was it? The
Interspecies Television Network.
Yeah, yeah. She was I guess her interview went well, and she became. From the male girl to the fired person to the CEO.
Right. Yeah,
she's a Hollywood dream, isn't it?
Now she's a network executive like you do.
Yeah.
So now she's in place to get revenge on Rough and Ready. That's what that is all about. And then they wrap up this thing with his money where he got like a third of it back and then had to give 10% of it to the guy that found the money.
To the detective, yeah.
Reddy's doing commercials for a recovery home.
And for shit eating.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But like the thing of this last issue is like they decide that, hey, you know, we had our reunion and we made the best of it, but we might be in a position and a place in our lives where we can be better on our own. And Reddy is, you know, he's through the recovery of his shit eating affliction and he's a spokesperson for this drug. This copra replacement or something. So people, like, I figure it's probably like a nicotine patch of some sort, or methadone for shit eaters. But but he's the spokesperson for it. And even like Ruff is saying, hey, you know what? I saw your commercials. You're doing really good.
Yeah, he's going to go off and do a musical.
And he starts singing. He's doing musicals. He's doing Broadway. And it looks like they're going to end up like at peace, you know. Yep. They went through this tumultuous reunion and they found their way. They leave each other amicably and they both do their own thing.
But then
the twist.
Dun dun dun. Yeah, the twist is they see the sex tape on TMZ, which is called DMZ.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a threesome with a redhead.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
And so there's a conversation here. We are screwed, ruined, and me with a potential 2-year deal to sell copacetic nationwide. How did they get this? Who shot it? Really? Let's do the math. It wasn't me. It wasn't you. I get it. And while you're getting it, get ready to be shreddy. And they get out of the limo, and people are pointing and hooting and hollering at them. And Shrafty says, your Q rating has shot through the roof.
Yeah, this actually helps their careers.
Right. Yeah,
but,
like sex tapes.
And another twist.
He dies.
Well, yeah, there's that. But our big ending here is that what's-her-face, Pamela, who's now a bigwig, she's able to, like, overwrite their contracts. So all this success and joy that they have as a, you know, a shit-eater and a singer, well, they can't do that anymore. Because she sold their contracts out, or she sold out the positions or something.
Yep.
So they are stuck together forever. And they get
and
themselves
it
a new role.
It takes forever to get there. Yeah, like, I'm flipping through the pages here. It is taking forever to fucking get to this point.
Oh, this is killing a bear with a spork. Oh, this is the shit.
Okay, so we finally get there. Okay. So they renamed it the Avenue of the Americas, and that's what the mailing address says. But only yokels and out-of-towners call it anything but Sixth Ave. And they come in together into the ITN studio, and they say, you, any clue what's what? Bupkis, and I'm in a holding pattern on 50,000 units. Tell me about it. We open in Boston in 2 weeks, and there's no way on earth we'll be ready. And they say, okay, we're here to see the new president and chief of programming. That would be me. Ah, it's Pamela.
Oh.
Oh, no. The woman who they screwed, the woman who believed in them, and they kicked to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, ready, I've called in and canceled your arrangement with copacetic effective immediately. Ruff, you're being replaced in the days of wine and roses. See, that's a joke, ladies and gentlemen, on the days of wine and roses. Get it?
Oh. I do now.
By your old dirty pal, also effective immediately. Any contract you've signed is superseded by the contract you inked with Interspecies. Or didn't that duplicitous rat shit Shraft tell you that? Oh, and hey, sorry for your loss. Now get your asses back to L.A. Your new show starts shooting on Monday, and it's already a big hit.
Oh, boy, I can't wait to find out what this is.
And... that he's a dog named Cats. He's a cat named Dog, because that's supposed to be funny, and they're making fun of sitcoms.
Yeah.
And in the next panel, and their husbands, animal husbands. And so the joke here is that the Interspecies Network has given an unprecedented 5-year order to a new comedy called Cats and Dog, where Rough and Ready, and they fight, they fuss, they love, and cuss, but mostly they just wove. And then, like, a Warner Brothers cartoon, it says, that's showbiz, instead of that's all, folks. So, 6 issues that led to a tasteless gay joke.
To a tasteless gay joke, yeah. Who was this for?
I'm just reading the comments on the site that I read this on. Kind of a shit ending. I have no idea what I just read. Hollywood in a nutshell. But here's the thing, like, if you have, like, is Shaken like a conservative type who's just like, Hollywood is
no.
a bag of shit?
No.
Or he's a liberal type, mm-hmm. but he's still saying Hollywood is... Then why is he making a gay joke at the end?
Yeah, doesn't seem very progressive, does it?
No! Yeah. No, no, no!
Yep.
Like, is he saying that being gay is bad? Like, oh, what a terrible thing. Because here's the thing, like, I know plenty of straight actors who take gay roles. In fact, it's becoming a thing now to where they don't want to hire straight actors for gay roles because they want black people to play black people and sure. to voice black characters in animation, and they want, you know, Ruby Rose wasn't even gay enough for Batwoman. They needed to find someone gayer. So, like, that's the direction we're lurching in Hollywood right now. So it makes the joke even more tone-deaf.
Sure. It absolutely does.
Now we're over the cliff. Now we are careening towards the earth in the ragtop to our death. This thing. Started off good, got weird, ended badly.
Yeah.
I'll give you the last word.
This was not a good time. I mean, talking about it was a blast. But the fact that we both had to read, what was it, 800 pages of this, that was tough. That was very tough. The ending, and I mean, knowing what I know about Chaykin and having read a good deal of his political satire, because that is the only switch that is on his dial, apparently, coming to the joke at the end was just like, huh?
Yeah.
It did not read like something that Chaykin would have written. But he did. I don't know what's going on with him. But it was the destination was not worth the journey. I mean, that's putting it mildly. And like I wanna meet one of these people who given it a 10 out of 10 and just be like, okay, I need you to sit down and learn me something.
Yeah, explain to me why it's a 10 out of 10.
Yes. Yes, please.
And
please,
you can't say it's because you hate Hollywood too.
Yeah.
You can't say it's because you're QAnon and Hollywood's a bunch of baby fucking cannibals or whatever it is that they believe. That can't be the only reason.
I don't even know what that means.
Don't worry about it.
But this goes right back to my opening argument here that these Hanna-Barbera things are... We're barking up the wrong tree here. These don't need to exist. I don't know who they're trying to... I mean, even just taking this out of the, you know, who's this for? Who would be enticed to pick this up? You know, yeah. This isn't like a dollar comic. I mean, it will be. It'll be less than that in a couple of months when these poor schlubs who run comic shops have to get rid of this shit. But at $4 a pop, I mean... There's an embarrassment of riches on the store shelves every single Wednesday, or Tuesday now, whatever the hell DC's doing. I mean, you've got 7,000 flavors of Avengers, X-Men, Spider-Man, Justice League, and you're going to spend $4 on the fucking Rough and Ready show?
Okay, so maybe you're the kind of person who's like, I can't read another Avengers comic or another Justice League comic as long as I live. I'm so sick of superheroes. We are now living in an age where everybody is putting out an independent comic. Mm-hmm. I just bought one from the bookshop.
Sure.
Like, and it wasn't from a comic shop. I went into Books a Million mm-hmm. and found Billionaire Island, which is like Ahoy Comics or some shit.
Oh, yeah. It's never been easier to put out a comic book now. So It's not even a huge cash investment anymore. There is so much stuff out there. If you look at the comic list website where they give you what's coming out that week, I mean, you're scrolling for minutes. You know, there's a lot of books coming out in certain weeks here.
Right.
And the fucking Rough and Ready show was one of them at some point. No.
You know, I think the idea of taking the Hanna-Barbera properties and modernizing them and giving them a social tinge to where, like, we can comment on things going on in the world through the guise of these characters, I think is an interesting idea. I think these writers are all kind of ham-fisted. And I said this when we talked about, like, the Dahmer book. You know, mm-hmm. some of these guys get so far up their own ass,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they're just like, I have some shit to say. Okay, you're entitled to say it. You're entitled to use this book to say it, but it doesn't mean anyone's going to listen. And you have to know your audience. Like, you know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. If I have some shit to say, I can say it, but no one has to listen. So I have to then think about, how am I going to reach my audience? Because there's saying some shit, and then there's getting people to listen to you say some shit.
Sure. Absolutely.
And that's where I think the vast majority of these Hanna-Barbera books fell down. They had some shit to say, and they didn't care, seemingly, if the audience was willing to listen. And when the audience tuned out, it just became, well, the audience is dumb.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, well, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one around to hear it, it does, in fact, not make a sound.
Yeah, it's like, if you enter a room and everyone holds their nose, don't assume that it's someone else that smells bad.
Right.
It's probably you. I'm thinking about, you know, we talked about the, we didn't talk about it, but we mentioned that there was a Flintstones comic here, that Russell one. Let's jump ahead 20 years, 30 years from now. We'll still be talking about and watching the original Flintstones cartoon from 1960, whatever. No one's going to give a flying fuck about what Mark Russell had to say in 2016.
Yeah.
Rough and Ready Show. I didn't know it was a thing, but I'm sure it has fans. The cartoon, if we were to watch it today, we'd receive it the same way we would have back in the 70s, the 60s, whenever. These things are timeless. These things are meant to entertain children of every generation. You know, as we outgrow them, new children come in and they take our spot. And then they outgrow them and then new children come in. No one's going to give a flying fuck what Howard Chaykin said in 2017. This is so dumb.
Yep.
This is just such a waste of time, a waste of resources, a waste of space. And I don't like it.
I'm going to give Dastardly and Muttley a chance, mostly because I picked it to go with Top Gun when that comes out, the Top Gun sequel.
I'm busy that week.
No, you're not. but that's the last one of these I'm giving a chance to. Like, I'm not reading Future Quest. I'm not reading The Jetsons. I didn't have any interest in Scooby Apocalypse to begin with, though I've heard.
Oh, that sucked.
Is it really bad?
Oh, God, and it's giving him DeMatteis, too, so it shouldn't suck, but it sucked.
Yeah, like I said, Dastardly and Muttley will be the last time I give these Hanna-Barbera books a chance, and then I'm kind of done with this. I need to move on with my life. So, with that said, that is our coverage of the Rough and Ready Show. I said
thought this was going to be a porno book.
I'm sure there's Rough and Ready porno out there, because if it exists, there's porno of it. So this is our Tom and Jerry week. Tomorrow we'll be doing a Damn You Hollywood for the HBO Max theatrical split release for the half animated, half live action Tom and Jerry film. On Wednesday, myself and Jesse Starcher will be reviewing Epica, Omega. David Wright and Robert Winfrey are reviewing all of the TNG Star Trek movies, Insurrection, Generations, First Contact, whatever the fourth one is, I can't remember the name of. So that'll be Thursday. Friday, we have a double shot of Damn You Hollywood. First in the afternoon, we're doing Boss Level, which will be debuting on Hulu with Frank Grillo, which is a time loop story of some sort. And then myself and Jason Teasley will be doing another episode of Damn You Hollywood later in the evening. We'll be doing the Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall sequel to Coming to America called Coming the Number Two America. Coming to America.
They talked you into it.
Yes. Don't get me started. And then my kids and I are going to do commentary for Tom and Jerry, the movie from 1992, I think it is. So that'll be fun. We'll watch the movie. My son will make goofy jokes about it. It'll be fantastic. You can go in the archives. Yeah, he's been dying to do another one with me, and I'm like, you're not really ready for long form conversation, but you can do commentaries.
You can
That's
riff.
Fine.
Yeah,
you can absolutely riff. Last week, myself and Christine talked Scene of the Crime. Myself, Jesse Starcher, and Robert Winfrey had a 3-hour therapy session where we discussed Too Old to Die Young. Myself and Sean Comer put Only God Forgives on trial. Myself and the Podsman, of which Chris Sheehan is one, reviewed The Elimination Chamber. Myself and Pat Mullen talked about the life and times of one of the world's greatest heavyweight champions in the history of boxing, Lennox Lewis. Robert Winfrey and I reviewed the Golden Globe winning I Care a Lot from Netflix. And that was, in fact, that for the week. All right, Christian, do your thing.
Okie dokie. You could find me be a little less negative about comics over at chrisandreggie.podbean.com or chrisisoninfiniteearths.com. Still doing X-Lapsed. We are finally out of X of Swords land, so that is a hell of a relief. And we just covered a six-issue story here on the show, but X of Swords was a 22-part story, and boy, it felt like at least three times that. It was a very, very long and drawn-out thing. So I'm glad it's behind us, and now we're moving into the Reign of X, the new era, the current era. I'm finally current, but not totally current. I don't know that I ever will be, but still having a good time with it. I hope anybody who listens is as well. I do have that next episode of The Juggernaut coming out tomorrow, so I know you listened to the first one, so the second one is coming out, and I get to complain a lot about Al Ewing during it, so
all right,
there's that. What else? That's about it for me, actually, for the moment. You can find me on Twitter at Ace Comics.
Okay. Before we go, one of the things that this reminded me of was, especially when I was collecting CDs, and really odd CDs to boot, one of the things I used to like to get is the classic cartoon theme song compilations that would come out.
Okay.
And you can actually find the classic cartoon theme songs that includes the Rough and Ready theme among the tens of hundreds that are on this compilation. I think there's like 40 in total. 50.
Oh,
there's
Lordy.
50 tracks here in total, it looks like. 80. The first disc is 40 tracks. The second one is 40, and it's got Rough and Ready, it's got the Pink Panther, Snagglepuss, Justice League Unlimited, Wally Gator, Yogi Bear, Merry Melodies, Mighty Mouse, it's got Peabody's Improbable History, South Park, all kind, Beavis and Butthead, Gigantor, Mary Poppins, Chim Chim Cheree, Magilla Gorilla, you know that one,
mm-hmm.
The Flintstones that we've been talking about all night, Quick Draw, Futurama, Speed Racer, all of your favorite cartoon theme songs are collected for you on this album, and you can find it where? Only on AmazonMusic.com. If you sign up for AmazonMusic.com, you can stream this album to your heart's content, and who wouldn't want to stream all these classic cartoon theme songs that we know and love? Mm-hmm. So if you go to getAmazonMusic.com/W2M Network right now, you can sign up for a free 30 days of Amazon Music and then stream till your heart's content.
Mm.
Isn't that wonderful?
I think that's fantastic. And if you do play the Rough and Ready song, you need to play it every time you enter a room, because
yeah,
that's what happened in this book. Every time they came in, their music started.
That's right.
And they were even questioned about that. And it's funny, because when they were questioned about that, that's when I noticed that it was happening. I was like, wait, that's happening?
Yes, everyone should have entrance music everywhere you go.
I think so. And one more thing, you mentioned Gigantor, and I know you're a Long Island guy, like I was, a Long Island expat. Do you remember Channel 12, the news channel there, the local Long Island news channel?
Yeah, I actually interned for them for a little bit.
Okay, and do you remember, like, in like the middle of the night, it would go off the air, and they'd play just like, it wasn't quite public access, but it would be like, you'd see like wanted posters. You remember seeing those ever?
Vaguely.
Like it'd be like a wanted poster, and I remember there was a very, very heavy set woman, and it was her picture there, and it said like her real name, and it said alias Gigantor. And that, anytime I hear of Gigantor, I think of that poor woman, who I'm sure she was a horrible woman. She was a wanted woman. I think about that wanted woman on Channel 12, Long Island News. But that's
all right.
It.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Chris, for joining me tonight on Source Material Live.
Right.
Next week, we'll take a break. Myself and Alexis Sheehan. Jesus Christ. Alexis Haina.
Close.
I've married you two now. Alexis Haina and I will be doing a comic strip for Extraction/CUDAD. But then It's St. Patrick's Week, and Christine will be back. We'll be talking Grimm Fairy Tales, the St. Patrick's Day 2013 one-shot edition. Then Alexis Hanna will be back, and we'll do Vision and Scarlet Witch, A Year in the Life, because that's the week we'll be covering WandaVision. And then finally, Chris will be back to close out the month of March. We'll be talking Pacific Rim Tales from Year Zero. So that's what we got coming up in the month of March here on the Source Material Live and Comic Strip. And with that, I'm finally done with my plugs. Be well, be safe, and behave.